Hello and welcome to our program today, which is the reading of the ARP magazine. And this is still the February-March issue of ARP. And this is brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Kevin Altamirano, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from this magazine here on OWL Radio. We're going to start with a second feature story in this issue of ARP, and it's entitled Cruise Ships Are Revving Up. It looks like 2023 is the year that vacations take to the ocean again en masse. The vessels are larger and more decked out than ever. And this is written by Fran Golden. Cruise ships are on a mission to recapture the seas. The COVID pandemic forced cruise lines to pull their ships into port. But now that health concerns have eased, passengers are returning. They are finding an industry reborn. As a longtime travel journalist, I have been on 170 ships, and I have seen how cruise lines can engage in a hospitality arms race. Before the pandemic struck, many new megaships were already on order, but the delay in launching means that 2023 will feel even more momentous for the industry. Come with us as we look at the crazy huge world of cruises. Ship design, making big ships feel less big. There's an interesting paradox about megaships. The extreme sizes mean that cruise lines can add more and more things to do. But at some point, ships may become too large for passengers to easily enjoy. And so Royal Caribbean has divided its Icon of the Seas ship to launch next year into 8 neighborhoods. The idea being that you choose the section that suits your interests and mostly stay in that area. One neighborhood caters to families with children, for example, while another is meant for young singles and couples. Carnival Cruise Line has adults-only spaces where passengers can enjoy some peace and quiet around hot tubs, pools, and bars away from the family crowd. Entertainment. Broadway shows and ways to play on stage. The old Las Vegas-style revues are long gone. Now singers from dancers recruited from Broadway and London's West End appear in slightly truncated versions of Broadway shows, such as Summer, the Donna Summer musical, which on the Norwegian Prima morphs into a big disco party with the audience. Daytime entertainment likewise has been updated. While the old belly flop and hairy chest contests are out, a replacement has emerged. On Carnival's Mardi Gras and its sister ships, you can watch or play Family Feud live. Recreation. Board a floating theme park. Roller coasters are thrilling enough, but one at sea gives you the sensation of flying above the vast blue ocean. Melissa Colby, 62, has ridden the coaster on Carnival's 5,000-passenger Mardi Gras. The first time I screamed, says the preschool teacher. The second, third, and fourth times, I was smiling and putting my arms up in the air. On Royal Caribbean's Icon, travelers will enjoy a water park with 6 slides. Nearby, on an attraction that's a combination skywalk, ropes course, and thrill ride, you'll be able to strap on a harness and walk a plank. At the end of the plank, the bottom drops out and you'll swing 154 feet above the ocean. Norwegian Cruise Line's new 3,100-passenger Norwegian Prima is topped with a go-kart track. Another attraction is a 10-deck drop in a waterless tube slide, mostly suspended off the side of the ship. Compare the costs. Visit the Caribbean by sea or stay at a resort. Sample trips for a couple from Chicago. A 7-night cruise aboard Royal Caribbean Symphony of the Seas from Miami. The price is $2,070 for an ocean view cabin, including food and many activities. Alcohol, onboard Wi-Fi, tipping, and shore excursions, of course, are extra, plus $200 for hotel on the night before departure. The airfare is $225 round trip per person. Compare that with 7 nights at Secrets Ara Cozumel. The price is $4,981 for a junior suite at this Mexican oceanfront resort, spa, and dive center. That includes unlimited dining, drinking, and tips. And our section here, same story about the cruise ships. This is the dining. Eat your way around the world. Food has always been a cruise calling card, and it has gotten better and more varied to reflect the growing foodie culture. Global flavors and vegan and vegetarian options are getting more play, and cruise companies have finally realized that their passengers might like to taste food from the destinations they're visiting, such as jerk chicken when they sail to Jamaica. To satisfy a whole lot of tastes, the Norwegian Prima has a complimentary food hall where you can choose from counters featuring Southern comfort food, Spanish tapas, or India chicken tikka, to name a few options. Some cruise lines are adding new specialty restaurants that charge extra for upgraded choices, such as sushi and aged steaks. Big culinary names may be involved. Emerald Lagasse has New Orleans-style bistros on Carnival's latest ships. A shrimp po' boy won't break the bank at $6. While the 3,200-passenger Celebrity Beyond and sister ship Celebrity Accent, debuting in December 2023, will boast restaurants by renowned chef Daniel Balud from $75 per person for 3 courses, $125 for 5 courses. Over the years, that traveler, Jill DelVincent, 78, has cruised with Carnival. She has seen more sophisticated menus in the main dining rooms. I love the lobster, she says. Her husband, Ken, favors the desserts, especially the melting chocolate cake. And drinking. The craft beer boom can't be contained by land. The latest Carnival ships have onboard breweries. Also in vogue, molecular cocktails that smoke and change colors. At a bar on Carnival's Mardi Gras, you can order the Crystal Ball, a tequila drink that arrives in a foggy orb. Norwegian Prima has a sustainable bar featuring drinks made with ingredients that might otherwise be discarded, as well as earth-friendly biodynamic wines. Ports of call. Beyond the beach. The Caribbean and Bermuda together represent 44% of the world cruise market, according to the Cruise Lines International Association, making them by far the world's most popular cruise destinations. For North American travelers, cruises to Alaska and the Mediterranean are also expected to be popular this year as passengers regain their sea legs. That's fairly typical, but what is changing is what travelers do when on shore. More sustainable and local experiences, says Roberta Jacoby, a hospitality and travel industry consultant. Cruise lines are fulfilling demand with cultural adventure, multi-generational lifestyle and wellness add-on shore excursions via local operators. On Holland America Line and Princess Cruises ships in Alaska, you can go salmon fishing with a local fisherman, and after you reel in the big one, have your catch cooked by the ship's chefs. On a Caribbean cruise, you might visit an eco park and farm that promotes environmental education on St. Kitts, or skip the beach in favor of a green monkey encounter at a wildlife reserve in Barbados. And this article, like I said earlier, was written by Fran Golden, who is an award-winning travel journalist and the author of numerous travel books, including 100 Things to Do in Alaska Before You Die. Our next story comes from the money section of ARP, and this is called Good Reasons to Change How You Pay. Freebies, security, and convenience are just some of the benefits of favoring credit cards and digital payments over cash and checks. COVID has reduced older Americans' comfort with handling cash, but we still can't quite let go of the habit. A sign of the times. In 2019, adults in two different age groups, those aged 18 to 24 and those 55 to 64, used cash for about one-third of their purchases, according to Federal Reserve research. 2 years later, that older cohort was still using cash 26% of the time. For young adults, however, the figure had dropped to only 17%. And while 59% of young adults said they would be comfortable leaving their cash at home and instead paying with their smartphone, only 36% of Americans age 51 to 65 would sign on to that, according to research from the payments firm called Marqeta. The most common reason older adults gave for carrying cash? Force of habit. If you're one of those people who find it hard to kick that cash habit, consider these benefits of going from paper to plastic or electronic when making purchases or dining out. Number one, rewards. Many credit cards come with rewards programs that earn you points or as much as 5% cash back on all your purchases, whether you use the card in person, online, or through a smartphone app known as a digital wallet, Apple Pay and Google Wallet, for example. Points can be redeemed for things like flights, hotel stays, and statement credits. Says Ted Rossman, rewards are basically free money. He's a credit card analyst from Bankrate.com. There is, however, an important caveat. These rewards won't nearly cover the interest costs if you're carrying a credit card balance from month to month. So, use your card, but pay it off every month. Number two, security. Worried that electronic payments are risky? Actually, it's quite the opposite. All the popular e-payment tools come with multiple features that combat fraud and diminish the risk of making mistakes. For instance, credit cards and digital wallets use encrypted data, which essentially means your credit card number and information aren't transmitted. This makes it difficult for anyone to steal your credit card number. And if a thief does somehow gain access to your card, the transaction may be stopped by your card issuer's fraud detection system. If all else fails, you're typically not on the hook for unauthorized purchases, as long as you promptly report them to your card issuer. Note that credit card protections are greater than those for debit cards, and it's essential to never share your debit card PIN with anybody. As for dropping a check in the mail to pay your utility bill, there's been a rise in mailbox theft in recent years, which may make paying bills by credit card or electronic transfer a safer choice. Interestingly, an earlier pre-pandemic study from the Federal Reserve found that 25% of adults 65 and older preferred paying bills with checks, compared to only 7% of adults ages 18 to 44. Number three, credit. Older people tend to have the highest credit scores, but if you paid off all your loans long ago and seldom use a credit card, you could eventually become known as unscorable. Not having an up-to-date credit score could make it harder to qualify for a loan, get insurance, set up a utility account, or get a cell phone plan, says John Olsheimer, a credit expert who formerly worked with FICO and Equifax. It's important that you use credit from time to time so your credit reports never start collecting dust, he says. If you're worried about paying interest or going into debt, Olsheimer says, use credit cards only for small everyday purchases and pay off the balance in full each month. And finally, convenience. Once you get used to digital payment tools, they're easy and fast to use. At the register, electronic transactions just take seconds, and you won't have to fumble through your pockets for loose change. Among friends and family, peer-to-peer payment apps make it simpler for you to send and receive money from your smartphone or other device. With peer-to-peer payment apps like Venmo, Zelle, and Cash App, you can quickly and easily split a dinner bill, repay a friend for the concert ticket she bought you, tip a service worker, or send money to a relative. And simple rules for protecting money in a cashless world, keeping your digital payments safe. Number one, create a different password for each account. That way, if your credentials are stolen in a data breach, a hacker won't be able to use the information to access your other accounts. Strong passwords have 8 or more characters, are hard to guess, and contain a mix of letters, numbers, and symbols, such as question mark, exclamation point. Number two, sign up for security features. Spending alerts can flag unauthorized credit card usage. Requiring passwords or a scan of your face or fingerprint can protect your phone and mobile wallet. Peer-to-peer money transfer apps offer two-factor authentication to make it harder for someone to use your account. And those peer-to-peer, again, are those Cash App, Venmo, Zelle apps. Number three, regularly monitor your accounts. At least once a month, review the transactions in your checking and credit card accounts, as well as any accounts in money transfer services, such as PayPal. This can flag potential signs of identity theft. If a transaction looks suspicious, act quickly and report the fraud. And number four, send money only to people you know. With peer-to-peer apps like Venmo, Zelle, and Cash App, you can send money to the wrong person and get scammed. Don't use the apps to pay a stranger or unfamiliar business. The dog breeder you found online? No. The baker at the farmer's market? That's fine. Another article from the money section entitled, "Are My Old Coins Worth a Small Fortune? A lesson in valuing the change in your junk drawer. How do you get a fair price for old coins when you don't know what they're worth? That was the question my father-in-law Howard and I faced last summer. He had a pile of change inherited decades ago, a 50-cent piece from 1826, a penny minted during the Civil War, a silver dollar from 1885, and 6 more from the 1920s. I had a $2 bill from the 1950s and some pristine John F. Kennedy half dollars from 1964, the last year the U.S. minted silver coins for circulation. It all seemed like a potentially valuable stash, and we were both ready to sell. But we were also ignorant about coin collecting, so I volunteered to take the lead and talk to a range of coin experts, numismatists, to use a fancy word. That's what coin experts are called, numismatists, to get their advice about value currency and selling it. Fantasies of Antiques Roadshow began swimming in my head, those thrilling moments when someone says, "That little old thing you brought in, it's worth $1 million. Here's what I learned on my quest for knowledge and riches. Lesson one, most things are common. That sobering bit of wisdom came from Mitch Sanders, a columnist for the Numismatist, the magazine of the American Numismatic Association. You know what's common? My lovely 1964 Kennedy half dollars. Mark Schimmel, who is a New York City store manager for Stax Bowers Galleries, one of the biggest coin auctioneers, said, "The mints made them in the millions, and people saved them in the millions. They all look beautiful because people didn't spend them." Lesson two, common things can have some extra value. Like other 20th century half dollars, dimes, and quarters minted before 1965, my half dollars are 90% silver. Even if such a coin from that era isn't a valuable collectible, Its silver content gives it a, quote, melt value. Used by dealers as a way to value it for purchase and sale, though they won't necessarily melt it down. Doug Musinger, who is owner of Brighton Tokens and Coins in Rochester, New York, explained to me that every dollar's worth of those pre-1965 coins, after wear and tear, contain about 0.715 ounces of silver. So one day last fall, when the metal was trading at $19 an ounce, you could have multiplied that price by 0.715 to learn that a dollar's worth of silver coins contained about $13 worth of silver, nearly 14 times the face value of the coins. If I had walked in that day with a handful of dimes and quarters totaling $3, Musinger said, he would have bought them for $36, or $12, 12 times the face value, leaving himself some room for profit. Lesson 3, oldies aren't necessarily goodies. I had high hopes for Howard's 1920 silver dollars. They were 100 years old, no wear, no tear, silver value about $15 alone. Sadly, I learned I might get only $25 or $30 a piece for them. Why? Millions more of these coins were minted than people needed, explains Sarah Miller, managing director of the New York City Office of Heritage Auctions, another top auctioneer. They sat in government vaults for decades. Lesson 4, condition can count for a lot. The same coin from the same year can be worth $4 or $4,000, depending on its condition, Musinger said. Before valuable coins are bought and sold by serious collectors, they're usually assessed by independent third-party firms that will assign the coins a number grade on a scale of 1 to 70, based on the presence or absence of factors, including scratches, corrosion, and luster. Howard's 1826 half dollar was in good shape. Examining it through a loop, Miller guessed a grading service would place it in the 40 or 50 range, something a dealer would sell for $150 and buy for a little less. Chamel priced it about the same. In worn condition, he told me, it would be worth only $30. But condition also worked against Howard and me. His 1885 dollar had a dark, sooty streak across Lady Liberty's face and a prominent nick on the rim. That's an ugly coin, said Musinger. We'd pay $25. He liked the copper Civil War token, which was privately minted in the North in 1863, when desperate merchants struck their own pennies amid a shortage of coins. It's a great bit of history, he said, but that's where his compliments ended for the bent, worn, and corroded coin. It'd be in our junk box for $3, he told me. My series 1953A $2 bill? It was folded and worn. In that condition, said Chanel, spend it. And finally, lesson 5. Ultimately, value lies in rarity. All too often on my quest, I heard the words if and instead, as in, if you had a 1928 piece dollar instead of a 1922, it would be worth 10 times as much. What gooses the price of coins is quantity. How many coins just like it have survived in as good or better condition? How many were minted in a particular year and at a particular mint? While more than 17 million 1885 dollars were, like Howard's ugly coin, minted in Philadelphia, only 228,000 were minted in Carson City, Nevada, carrying a CC mint mark. Even a damaged 1885 CC is worth a few hundred dollars more, said Miller. So there I was at the end of my antique coin roadshow. Not a big winner. I like to think of this as a treasure hunt, Miller had told me. You're helping people look for something that's valuable, and you hope that you can find it. Sometimes you do, and sometimes you don't. And this article was written by senior editor George Manns, who writes the column, Financially Speaking, in the ARP Bulletin. A couple of pieces, or a few pieces, from the section called Upfront in the ARP magazine. This one is called Festivals for the Rest of Us. That's a play on the Seinfeld episode, Festivus, for the Rest of Us. Anyway, skip the standard music fest or art flair. For a unique experience, make your way to one of these wild events. The UFO Festival in Roswell, New Mexico, and this runs from June 30th to July 2nd, ufofestival.com. Legend has it that an alien craft crashed in this community in 1947, and so it has been dubbed the UFO capital of the world. Enjoy laser shows, sci-fi movies, a night skywatch, and talks by UFOlogists. And also, you can dress up for the costume contest. Or how about the Wisconsin State Cow Chip Throw? This happens on September 1st through 2nd. WisCow, W-I-S-Cow Chip, WisCowChip.com. This event features a craft fair, a parade with bovine floats, and the cow chip throw, in which contestants hurl dried pieces of dung. Or how about the Avon Heritage Duct Tape Festival? And this is held in Avon, Ohio, June 15th through the 17th. Stick around for this extravaganza that showcases duct tape in various forms, sculptures, crafts, fashions, parade floats, and more. This community is the home of the Duck brand tape and the self-proclaimed duct tape capital of the world. Or how about the Oz Stravaganza, which is held in Chittenango, New York, June 2nd through the 4th? Follow the yellow brick road to the birthplace of author L. Frank Baum to see landmarks from his life and memorabilia in the All Things Oz Museum. This is the longest-running Wizard of Oz festival. Or how about the Humongous Fungus Fest, which is held in Crystal Falls, Michigan, from October 25th through October 26th. This is one of the oldest living organisms, world's oldest living organisms, dating back to before Christ, is a 440-ton honey mushroom that sprawls over 173 acres. Events include a mushroom forage and a cook-off. And last but not least, we had some birthdays over the last February, March, the last couple of months. Oscar de la Hoya had a birthday on February 4th. Michael Jordan, whose birthday was on the 17th of February, turned 60. Mary Steenburgen, who had hers way back on February 8th, she turned 70. Michael Bolton, remember him? February 26th, he turned 70. Can you believe it? Shaka Khan turned 70 on March 23rd. And just this past March 26th, Bob Woodward, the author, turned 80. And Yoko Ono had her 90th birthday on February 18th. Just amazing.